Obituaries. James M. Humphreys, Jr. James Mac Humphreys, Jr., M.D., entered his eternal rest early Friday morning, May 19, 2023, after a lengthy illness. His late father, James Mac Humphreys, Sr., was a descendant of the Papa Joe Humphreys Far West Texas pioneer ranching family, who settled in the Marfa area circa 1890. His late mother was Barbara Clark Humphreys, a Mayflower descendant of Isaac Allerton. Dr. Humphrey was born in 1943 when his father, Mac, was a pilot in the Army Air Corps. He was preceded in death by his parents, his sister Carolyn, and his son Robert. Survivors include his wife Sharon, his sister Grace, his sons Lloyd and wife Janice, and Earl and wife Mary, his daughter Adrian and husband Brandt Stovall, his daughter-in-law Robin, his stepson Chris Stevens, his stepson Mark and wife Heather Sessing, his stepdaughter Stephania Smith, his five grandchildren, Harrison, Hannah, Ben, Madison, and PB. His numerous step-grandchildren, especially Adam, Kevin, Zoe, Matthew, and Stella, several brothers-in-law, several nieces and nephews, many cousins, his medical community family, his beloved Sunday school department, and his Paisano family. In lieu of flowers, donations in Jim's memory may be made to First Baptist Church, Midland Missions or Music Departments, www.fbcmidland.org, Paisano Baptist Encampment, www.paisanoencampment.org, or Midland Memorial Hospital Foundation, www.midlandhealth.org. Visitation with his family will be held on Friday, June 2nd from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home on North Big Spring Street in Midland. A service in his memory will be held on Saturday, June 3rd, 2023 at 11 o'clock a.m. in the Worship Center of First Baptist Church, Midland, Texas, with Reverend Dr. Darren Wood officiating. If you can't be present at the service in person, you may watch it live streamed at www.fbc-midland.org. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Patsy Hinchy. Native Midlander Patsy Yeager Hinchy passed away peacefully in her sleep on May 8, 2023, in Lone Tree, Colorado, at the age of 87. She was born in Midland, Texas, to West Texas oil pioneers Patsy Goss Yeager and Wilbur Arthur Yeager. She is survived by her three children, John Douglas Hinchy, Laura K. Hinchy, and Patsy Elaine Levitz, and five grandchildren, Lila Hinchy, Luke Hinchy, Caitlin Levitz, Haley Levitz, and Jonathan Levitz. She is also survived by a sister-in-law, Sharon Yeager, and several beloved nieces and nephews. Memorials may be sent to Doctors to the World, https://doctorsoftheworld.org. Nancy Roderick Obituary. Nancy Roderick, 81, of Midland, passed away May 23, 2023. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Friday, June 2, 2023, at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Elaine Wisenhunt Obituary. Elaine Wisenhunt, 69, of Midland, passed away May 24, 2023. The family will have a private service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Helen Wilson, Obituary. Helen Grandma Gigi Wilson was born on February 9, 1933, in Cincinnati, Ohio, and peacefully transitioned from this life on Tuesday, May 16, 2023, in her home in Midland, Texas. Helen is now reunited with her late husband, Jim Wilson, and their son, Robert Rob Wilson. She is survived by her brother, Lee Richardson of Eugene, Oregon, her daughter, Kathleen Kathy Young, and Kathy's husband, Bob Young, of Midland, Texas, her daughter-in-law, Catherine Wilson of Cameron Park, California, grandchildren, Amanda Martin, Tony Martin, Daniel Young, Christopher Wilson, and Sean Wilson, and great-grandchildren, Sophia Rice, Grant Young, and Oliver Young. A celebration of life service will be held in her honor at American Heritage on Friday, June 2, 2023, at 3 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, in Helen's memory. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 27th, 2023. $86.7 million secured for expanded behavioral health center. The Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center hasn't been built yet, but there is money in the state budget for its expansion. State Representative Tom Craddock announced that $86.7 million in new funding has been secured that will allow for a 100-bed expansion. The first 100 beds were partially funded in October 2021 by the Texas Legislature with a one-time appropriation of $40 million. Quote, West Texas has a dire need for quality mental health care, and this funding will allow the construction of an additional 100 beds to serve the Permian Basin region at the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center, end quote, Craddock wrote in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. In March, the Reporter-Telegram announced there was a new funding request for the 100-bed expansion and annual operating cost support. Quote, a proposed expansion would bring the total to 200 beds and would be comprised of a combination of acute child/adolescent beds and competency restoration rooms, end quote, according to the update. The capital funding request, it was reported at the time, included $65 million for the 100-bed expansion, $10.5 million for infrastructure planning, design, and construction to the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center site, and $11.2 million in startup funding for PBBHC workforce. The Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center is a joint venture between Midland Health and Medical Center Health System in Odessa. Officials broke ground on the project in April. The center will be located between Midland and Odessa on 54 acres donated by Diamondback Energy, adjacent to the University of Texas Permian Basin's Midland campus. The current estimate of the total project cost has increased to $130 million, according to former Midland Health CEO Russell Myers, who has transitioned to developmental role for the Midland Memorial Foundation, focusing on the completion of the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center and other developmental projects. Myers also stated that the state's $40 million appropriation has been supplemented by $45.3 million in contributions and confirmed pledges, leaving a balance to be raised locally. Quote, while fundraising efforts are still underway, indications that are that sufficient local philanthropic support will be available to fully fund the project, end quote, Craddock's office stated earlier this spring. Myers was equally optimistic in his comments in April. Quote, this thing is going to happen and it will be transformative to this region, end quote, Myers said. In a related item, Craddock's office reported the following funding was secured. $1.7 million to create a, quote, mental health workforce, end quote, training program at Midland College. These funds will be used to establish a mental health workforce training program. Quote, this funding is a big step in Representative Craddock's initiative to ensure the workforce is trained and ready to work in the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Hospital under construction in Midland, end quote, his office reported. MISD Police Chief Barclay resigns. Midland ISD Police Chief Arthur Barclay resigned Friday. The district provided little information about the resignation, just offering the following statement. Quote, Friday, Midland ISD accepted the resignation of Chief Arthur Barclay, effective immediately. While we appreciate his service to the district the last 4+ years, it is in the best interests of the district to reevaluate the leadership of the Midland ISD Police Department. A culmination of events have led to this decision, and we are acting swiftly to find his replacement. As always, the safety and security of our campuses is our highest priority. We wish him well in his future endeavors." End quote. Former Superintendent Orlando Riddick hired Barclay in 2018. At the time, Barclay was given a salary that was more than $40,000 higher than the previous chief, David Coburn. At the time, the district stated the pay increase was needed as the chief of police position was reclassified from a director to an executive director level position as part of the district's restructuring efforts under Riddick. Coincidentally, the MISD board approved Barclay's plan in March to increase the MISD police force by 16 positions over the next 3 years. Crude prices increase heading into long weekend. Some optimism about an agreement on the nation's debt ceiling gave boost to oil prices, which posted their second consecutive weekly gain heading in to the Memorial Day holiday weekend. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 4 of 5 trading days, opening the week with a 44-cent rise and highlighted by a $1.43 rise Wednesday that sent prices over the $74 mark. Prices gave back $2.51 Thursday, but rebounded with an 84-cent gain Friday to end the week at $72.67, up from $71.55 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $69.15, according to Plains All-American. Natural gas prices fell 4 of 5 trading days, beginning with an 18-cent drop Monday. Henry Hub futures on the NYMEX rose 7.7 cents Wednesday in their only gain of the week, then fell 9 cents Thursday and another 12.6 cents Friday, to end the week at $2.181 per MCF, well below the $2.585 at last Friday's close. Quote, year to date, oil and gas prices haven't affected our activity levels, end quote. Lance Taylor, president and chief executive officer of Steward Energy, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, prices have been bound in a range in which we are comfortable continuing our development. However, earlier this year, we reallocated capital due to unsustainable inflationary pressure on service costs. That effort has proved to be both beneficial and wise, as we are starting to see the break over in persistent services cost increases that have run wild for the better part of 2 years, end quote. It's an interesting time for oil prices, Andrew Wood, analyst with Mintec, told the Reporter-Telegram by phone. China will be the most significant watch point, he said, in part because it's one of the world's largest oil importers. Quote, China is really important, end quote, he said. He noted that earlier in the year, there was significant optimism that when China relaxed its COVID restrictions, it would result in an uptick in demand through increased trade and travel, which would benefit oil prices. That failed to happen, he said, and now some figures indicate China's on the verge of deflation, meaning oil demand would remain as is. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries will be another watch point, Wood said as its June 4th meeting approaches. While members surprised markets in April with an oil output cut, he said OPEC watchers expect another cut at this meeting. Quote, there are so many different factors in the markets, from supply and demand to global politics, end quote, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine and even the U.S. debt ceiling, Wood said. Quote, the price is reflective of a volatile global environment, end quote. He was loath to pinpoint specific price levels, saying much more data on supply, demand, global economics, and global political issues is needed to understand prices will head. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americas, with Oanda, said crude prices were also supported by, quote, another round of impressive economic data that exemplifies how resilient the U.S. economy remains, end quote. In his daily newsletter, Moya wrote, this next week, quote, could deliver a make-or-break moment for oil, as we will see if Chinese manufacturing is rebounding, if the U.S. labor market is ready to soften, how oil giants Exxon and Chevron address climate ambitions at their annual meetings, and if the Saudis and Russians can reach agreement on what to do, on what to drive OPEC Plus do with output, end quote. Behavioral Health Center among projects in funding announcement. On Thursday, the conference committee report for the 2023 to 2025 biennium was released. Again, the Permian Basin and House District 82 will see Texas dollars invested in our communities. State Representative Tom Craddock reported the following funding was secured to directly alleviate needs and to continue ongoing work by the state of Texas. The legislation includes the following funding, according to a release from Craddock's office. New funding. $86.7 million for a 100-bed expansion for Permian Behavioral Health Center. West Texas has a dire need for quality mental health care, and this funding will allow the construction of an additional 100 beds to serve the Permian Basin region at the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center. The first 100 beds were partially funded in October 2021 by the Texas Legislature with a one-time appropriation of $40 million. The Permian Basin Behavioral Health Hospital broke ground on April 28th. $15 million for rural health initiatives. West Texas is in need of quality health care, and this funding helps increase access to care and the challenges presented in rural Texas. This effort will be led by the Texas A&M Health Sciences Center in Martin and Dawson counties. $6 million for the University of Texas Permian Basin, UTPB, quote, healthcare workforce training, end quote. This funding will help strengthen the quality of health workforce education and enhance the skills of Permian Basin healthcare workers. The funding will be used to enhance programs such as the nursing and counseling programs already in place at UTPB. $1.7 million to create a, quote, mental health workforce, end quote, training program at Midland College. These funds will be used to establish a mental health workforce training program. This funding is a big step in Representative Craddock's initiative to ensure the workforce is trained and ready to work in the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Hospital under construction in Midland. $61.969 million to develop a Keeping Texas Prepared strategy. This builds our statewide network of emergency response professionals. Across the five agencies of AgriLife Extension Service, Forest Service, Engineering Extension Service, Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Laboratory, and the Texas Division of Emergency Management, we can count on a professional, trained response network in the event of an emergency. These individuals live and work amongst us and are vital in the event of an emergency such as fires, windstorms, and other natural disasters. I am proud to help fund this important network of response professionals across Texas and specifically the Permian Basin. The sustained funding. $2.301 million for Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, quote, Midland Medical Residency, end quote. This funding allows the Midland Medical Residency Program to continue. This program is vital to the continued success in attracting the best healthcare opportunities for West Texans. $1.676 million for Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, quote, Permian Basin Surgical Residency, end quote. The surgical residency program has been very successful in the Permian Basin, and this funding allows the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center to keep attracting the finest healthcare professionals to West Texas. The residency was established after in 2021 and has seen continued growth and success in our local communities. These funds will allow the program to continue to grow and recruit the best surgeons to the Permian Basin. $615,707 for the Permian Basin Petroleum Museum. The Permian Basin accounts for about 40% of all oil production in the United States. This funding will allow the Petroleum Museum to continue its education and preservation of 230 million years of history for generations to come. $139,800 for Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Services, quote, chronic disease prevention, end quote. This funding is essential in keeping West Texans safe and prepared from chronic diseases. These agents work in our communities, providing education and resources for a variety of chronic diseases, including diabetes, how we can all lead a healthy lifestyle, and more. Clay Walker headlining Black Gold Bash. American country musician Clay Walker will headline the 5th annual Black Gold Bash after Clint Black backed out due to a medical emergency. Quote, based on the advice of his doctors, Clint needs to undergo a procedure on his back prior to this performance, end quote, a member of Black's team said in a press release. The Black Gold Bash, hosted by Oilfield Helping Hands, raises funds for the Permian Basin chapter of OHH, a nonprofit focused on providing industry workers and their families with financial help in times of need. More information about the 20-year-old organization can be found at www.oilfieldhelpinghands.org. Tickets for the June 7th event can be bought at www.midlandhorseshoe.com. The $100 VIP tickets include access to VIP parking, shorter bar lines, private restrooms, dinner and drinks, while the $35 ticket gives guests access to the lawn seating area. The concert fundraiser duo will take place at the Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail. The schedule includes 6 p.m. Gates Open, performance by the Rick Carr Band. 7 p.m. Cody Hibbard performs. 8 p.m. OHH presentation. 9 p.m. Clay Walker takes the stage. What's Up with Midland? The Blue Door. Live music with Dave Martinez Saturday. Centennial Park. Music in the Park, June 2nd, 30th. Movie in the Park, June 8th, 22nd. Mextess Family Fiesta, June 10th. The Destination. Matt Castillo, Saturday. Tejano Thirsty Thursdays, June 1st. The Dustin Tolliver Band, June 2nd. Jerry Hart and Flatland, June 3rd. Karaoke Night, June 8th. Friday Night Live, The Rick Carr Band, June 9th. Stephanie Montiel, June 10th. Open Mic Night, June 15th. Friday Night Live, Roasted Crow, June 16th. Mike Donnell, June 17th. Friday Night Live, Gone by Nin 9, June 23rd. Case Harden, June 24th. Friday Night Live, The Day Trips, June 30th. Horseshoe. Project Graduation, Saturday. Third Annual Shale Energy Conference and Trade Show, June 7th through 8th. Clay Walker, June 7th. Desert Paws Obedience Club, June 9th through 11th. Midland Cattle Baron's Ball, June 10th. Dan Cruz Classics, June 17th. Museum of the Southwest. Downtown Midland Farmers Market, every Saturday. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, June 4th, 11th, 18th, 25th. The Tailgate, The Great Divide, June 9th. Casey Donahue, June 17th. Tall City Brewing Company, Brew Jitsis, Sunday. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Latin Queen and Comedy Kings, June 2nd. Britt Floyd, June 13th. Joe Gatto's Night of Comedy, June 15th. Madagascar the Musical, June 21st. Cinema Under the Stars, Top Gun, June 25th. Student attack suspect taken into custody. A Midland ISD student was taken into custody Thursday in connection with the incident that happened May 15th at Alamo Junior High. Sheriff David Kreiner confirmed Friday that the Midland County Sheriff's Office Warrants Division took the suspect into custody. Because the suspect resides in the county, MCSO was notified of the directive to apprehend and respond to her address only to be informed by family members that she was at school, he confirmed. Deputies responded to the school, Midland Alternative Program, and took the suspect to the Barbara Culver Juvenile Center. Midland ISD offered the following about the students being on a Midland ISD campus. Quote, when incidents which require police involvement occur on our campuses, the police investigation and the district disciplinary action are governed by a separate set of rules. Student disciplinary matters and the subsequent consequences are dictated by Texas Education Code, Chapter 37, and the MISD Student Code of Conduct. The offender in this case was not subject to expulsion according to those rules and was placed in an interim alternative education setting as a result. In cases such as this one, in which the police investigation extends beyond the amount of time that a student may be suspended from our campuses in accordance with the law, it is not uncommon for the student to be apprehended while in attendance at the disciplinary alternative educational program, end quote. The attack resulted in another student being taken to a hospital in Lubbock for 6 days, including parts of 3 days in the ICU. Texas Permian add rigs as U.S. count falls again. Drilling activity continued to slow amid economic uncertainties and oil and natural gas price volatility. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since 1944, declined for a fourth consecutive week, dropping 9 rigs to 711. It is also 16 rigs, or 2% below last year's count of 727. The rig count is the lowest since last May, and Baker Hughes said the tally fell 44 rigs during the month, its biggest decline since 2020, when the pandemic was spreading worldwide. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil fell 5 rigs to 570, the lowest since last May, and 4 rigs below the 474 counted the previous May. The number of rigs drilling for oil fell 21 during the month, the biggest monthly decline since June 2020. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell 4 rigs to 137, the lowest level since March 2022, and 14 fewer than the 151 reported a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 24, the largest monthly drop since January 2016. Texas bucked the national trend, adding 2 rigs for 359 at work statewide, one more than 358 last year. New Mexico dropped 1 rig to 108 rigs active in the state. Wyoming, 1, joined Texas as the other producing state to see an increase. Alaska, 1, Colorado, 1, Louisiana, 2, Oklahoma, 5, and Utah, 2, joined New Mexico as producing states to lose rigs for the week. The Permian Basin joined Texas in bucking the national trend, adding 1 rig for 350 rigs operating across the region, 8 more than the 342 reported last year. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active county in the Permian with 54 rigs, down 1 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, was a close second, reporting 53 rigs for a second week. Martin County had 42 rigs, down 1, while Reeves County lost 3 rigs, the steepest drop among Permian counties, to 36. Midland County reported 31 rigs, down 1 for the week. Loving County had 27 rigs for a second week. Ward County added 4 rigs, the sharpest rise among Permian counties, for 17 rigs. Reagan and Upton County each reported 14 rigs, up 3 for Reagan and down 1 for Upton. Andrews County reported 11 rigs for a third week, and Howard County had 10, down 2 for the week. Ectra and Garza counties each saw renewed activity with 1 rig going to work in each county. Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 767 during the week ended May 24th, falling by 13 rigs from the previous week's peak. The count is down 5% or 42 rigs in the last month and down 7% year over year. The Permian led major plays in declines, falling 6 rigs to 335. The Anadarko Basin fell by 3 rigs to 60, and the Gulf Coast dropped 2 to 86. The DJ and Williston Basins each dropped 1 rig to 17 and 37. The only major play to not see a decline in rigs was Appalachia, which added 1 for a total of 54. Nancy Roderick obituary. Nancy Roderick, 81, of Midland, passed away May 23, 2023. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Friday, June 2, 2023, at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Texas Permian add rigs as U.S. count falls again. Drilling activity continued to slow amid economic uncertainties and oil and natural gas price volatility. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since 1944, declined for a fourth consecutive week, dropping 9 rigs to 711. It is also 16 rigs, or 2% below last year's count of 727. The rig count is the lowest since last May, and Baker Hughes said the tally fell 44 rigs during the month, its biggest decline since 2020, when the pandemic was spreading worldwide. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil fell 5 rigs to 570, the lowest since last May, and 4 rigs below the 474 counted the previous May. The number of rigs drilling for oil fell 21 during the month, the biggest monthly decline since June 2020. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell 4 rigs to 137, the lowest level since March 2022, and 14 fewer than the 151 reported a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by 24, the largest monthly drop since January 2016. Texas bucked the national trend, adding 2 rigs for 359 at work statewide, one more than 358 last year. New Mexico dropped 1 rig to 108 rigs active in the state. Wyoming, 1, joined Texas as the other producing state to see an increase. Alaska, 1, Colorado, 1, Louisiana, 2, Oklahoma, 5, and Utah, 2, joined New Mexico as producing states to lose rigs for the week. The Permian Basin joined Texas in bucking the national trend, adding 1 rig for 350 rigs operating across the region, 8 more than the 342 reported last year. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active county in the Permian with 54 rigs, down 1 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, was a close second, reporting 53 rigs for a second week. Martin County had 42 rigs, down 1, while Reeves County lost 3 rigs, the steepest drop among Permian counties, to 36. Midland County reported 31 rigs, down 1 for the week. Loving County had 27 rigs for a second week. Ward County added 4 rigs, the sharpest rise among Permian counties, for 17 rigs. Reagan and Upton County each reported 14 rigs, up 3 for Reagan and down 1 for Upton. Andrews County reported 11 rigs for a third week, and Howard County had 10, down 2 for the week. Ector and Garza counties each saw renewed activity with 1 rig going to work in each county. Enverus Foundations, part of the Energy Focus Software as a Service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 767 during the week ended May 24th, falling by 13 rigs from the previous week's peak. The count is down 5% or 42 rigs in the last month and down 7% year over year. The Permian led major plays in declines, falling 6 rigs to 335. The Anadarko Basin fell by 3 rigs to 60, and the Gulf Coast dropped 2 to 86. The DJ and Williston Basins each dropped 1 rig to 17 and 37. The only major play to not see a decline in rigs was Appalachia, which added 1 for a total of 54.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, May 30th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Where's the Great American Pay Raise? Midland." By Alex Tanzi, Bloomberg. U.S. weekly wages fell in 2022, according to new Bureau of Labor Statistics figures, revealing widespread softness that wasn't previously evident in other data. Average weekly wages were $1,385 in the fourth quarter of last year, a rare 2.3% decline from the same period in 2021. The latest results from the quarterly Census of Employment and Wages published Wednesday showed. The 2022 drop followed a 5.9% increase the year before. The QCEW figures differ from other government measures of wages in that they include things like bonuses, stock options, and severance pay. They're also used to revise more timely high-frequency measures like those included in the monthly jobs report published by the BLS. Last year's drop probably reflects a smaller pay incentive amid a softening in hiring trends, according to Ron Hetrick, an economist at Lightcast. In 2021, companies in all kinds of industries were offering unusual perks to attract workers as they scrambled to staff up again when the economy reopened after COVID lockdowns. Employers have pulled back on the bonuses that they're offering as the labor market has cooled, Hetrick said. That includes everything from hiring bonuses to retention bonuses to inflation bonuses. The QCEW measure provides a different perspective on the state of the labor market than the average weekly earnings figures published in the monthly jobs report, which showed a 4.2% increase in 2022. The differences in the types of compensation included in each mean the two are not directly comparable. It also played a role in the weak figures on gross domestic income published Thursday, with wages and salaries, quote, now estimated to have increased $53.0 billion in the fourth quarter, a downward revision of $135.4 billion, unquote. After accounting for the QCEW data, the Bureau of Economic Analysis said, wage decreases were relatively widespread across the U.S., according to the QCEW data, with 240 of the largest 355 counties seeing declines. The report also contained several clues that a shift in the composition of the workforce, with higher-paying industries shedding jobs, while hiring in lower-paying industries remained robust, helps put downward pressure on overall wages. San Francisco, for example, registered a 22.6 drop in average weekly wages, the highest decline among the 355 largest counties, as professional and business services wages fell 24.9%. New York County saw wages fall 9.4%, with a 14.9% pay decline in finance. We are seeing that demand for workers is slowing down in tech and in other white-collar sectors, while it still remains a hot labor market for some of those other industries like food services and healthcare, said Daniel Zhao, an economist at Glassdoor. One bright spot was Midland, which saw an average weekly wages rise of 6.1%, the biggest increase among the 355 largest counties. The natural resources and mining sector in Midland registered a 3.3% wage increase. A surge in oil prices in 2022 spurred increased drilling activity in and around Midland, which sits atop the country's largest oil basin. Energy companies have scrambled to find workers, boosting pay and helping drive down the area's unemployment rate. The QCEW also contained new information on employment. It showed a 2.6% increase in headcount across the country in 2022, about a half percent point lower than the employment growth registered in monthly jobs reports. Gains were concentrated in the South, with Midland seeing the biggest rise in headcount, up 7.9%. Other counties in Texas and in Florida rounded out the top five. Elkhart, Indiana, known as the world's recreational vehicle manufacturing capital, and Hendricks, Indiana, saw the largest decreases in employment, with headcount down 1.7% in each county. This article is entitled Paxton Impeachment. Craddock, Landgraf Explain Their Votes, by Stuart Doreen. The representatives of Midland and Odessa in the Texas House voted differently Saturday on the impeachment of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. State Representative Tom Craddock, Republican Midland, voted against the adoption of impeachment articles, while State Representative Brooks Landgraf voted in favor. The entire body of the House approved the resolution by a vote of 121 to 23. Ultimately, I voted against the resolution, Craddock wrote in a statement. My vote today is not a statement as to whether or not I believe Attorney General Paxton is guilty or innocent of the allegations in the articles of impeachment. Rather, I voted against the resolution, as I believe the process is just as important as the end result. Landgraf wrote on his Facebook page, Attorney General Paxton has been a fierce defender of Texas sovereignty, and this vote was not about the good work he has done. But this is Texas, and no one, regardless of their past victories or future ambitions, should be above the law. I know that my vote won't be popular with everyone, but I voted on principle, not political expediency. The Texas Tribune reported Saturday that the vote temporarily removes Paxton from office over allegations of misconduct that included bribery and abuse of office. Attention next shifts to the Texas Senate, which will conduct a trial with senators acting as jurors and designated House members presenting their case as impeachment managers, the Texas Tribune stated. Statements from State Representatives Tom Craddock and Brooks Landgraf about voting on articles of impeachment regarding Attorney General Ken Paxton. Today, the Texas House of Representatives acted on a resolution to issue articles of impeachment against Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. This resolution was filed in the House on May 25th. The resolution was considered by and voted out of the House General Investigating Committee on May 25th. After the announcement of the filing, the House of Representatives was then given a transcript of a hearing of the same committee held on May 24th. Prior to the announcement of the resolution being filed, members of the House were not made aware an impeachment was being considered unless they were the five serving on the committee which considered the resolution. The resolution presented to the House included 20 counts of impeachment. However, the vote before the body was merely once to issue articles of impeachment or not. I have heard from constituents across the district regarding this matter. I read the transcript of the hearing and listened to the arguments debated in the Texas House, both for and against issuing the articles of impeachment. In doing so, I found there to be a lack of due process, which is consistent with prior articles of impeachment issued by the body. Attorney General Paxton was not allowed to present evidence, participate in the process, or even refute the allegations before the committee or full House. Furthermore, when the debate was taken up, there were time limits for the presentation, the debate, and the speeches. This is all not consistent with the processes utilized before by the House. Ultimately, I voted against the resolution. My vote today is not a statement as to whether or not I believe Attorney General Paxton is guilty or innocent of the allegations in the articles of impeachment. Rather, I voted against the resolution as I believe the process is just as important as the end result. Signed, State Representative Tom Craddock, Republican, Midland. After a thorough review of the evidence provided by investigators and prayerful consideration, I voted today to send forth articles of impeachment regarding Attorney General Ken Paxton for a full trial in the Texas Senate. To be clear, this was not a vote to oust anybody from office, but a vote to send the articles of impeachment to the Texas Senate. The Texas Constitution, which I took a solemn oath to preserve, protect, and defend, does not allow the House to determine guilt in impeachment proceedings. It authorizes the Senate to hold a public trial with all the rights of due process. The Senate will decide whether or not to remove Attorney General Paxton from office. The purpose of impeachment proceedings is to protect the state of Texas, not to punish anyone. The articles of impeachment that were approved by the Texas House, with the support of more than 70% of House Republicans, detailed 20 separate charges ranging from abuse of power, multiple violations of Texas law, to misappropriation of public resources and obstruction of justice. Attorney General Paxton has been a fierce defender of Texas sovereignty, and this vote was not about the good work he has done. But this is Texas, and no one, regardless of their past victories or future ambitions, should be above the rule of law. I know that my vote won't be popular with everyone, but I voted on principle, not political expediency. Signed, State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, on his Facebook page. This article is entitled MC Profile, Senegal Native Studies for Entrepreneurial Career, by Rebecca Bell, Midland College. 20-year-old Senegal native Ndeya Ndour has lived in the U.S. for 4 years and started taking classes at Midland College in August 2022. U.S. history is my favorite class, Ndour said. It's amazing how a little group of colonies became the most powerful country in the world. Ndour said that she would like to stay in the United States. She is majoring in business administration and wants one day to start her own business. The entrepreneurial spirit is in her genes. Her aunt and uncle currently live in Midland and have a trucking company. I moved to the United States when I was 16, Ndour explained. At the time, I had family living in New York, so I lived in Queens and graduated from John Adams High School about a year ago. New York was interesting, fun, and a good place to vacation. However, there is a lot of crime. I much prefer the quiet, safe life that Midland has to offer. The winters in Midland are chillier than in Senegal, but not as bad as New York. Even though Ndour wants to remain in the United States, she fondly recalls her childhood in Senegal. Senegal is located on the westernmost point of the African continent and is known as the gateway to Africa, she explained. I grew up in Saint-Louis, which is the old colonial city and near the mouth of the Senegal River. Saint-Louis was the French capital of Senegal from 1673 until 1902, when the capital was moved to Dakar. It is also close to the island of Gorée, which is the location on the Atlantic Ocean where many Africans passed before embarking on wooden slave ships to Europe and the U.S. between the 16th and 19th centuries. Despite this dark time in history, Senegal is a lovely country. It lies at an ecological boundary where semi-arid grassland, oceanfront, and tropical rainforest converge. This diverse environment has endowed Senegal with a wide variety of plant and animal life. One of the most beautiful places in Senegal is Lake Retba, or Lac Rosa, Ndour said. It is a natural pink salt lake and one of the richest algae sources in Africa. Its pink hue comes from the algae concentrations. It is also one of the saltiest lakes in the world. Salt farming from the lake is a major industry in the area. Ndour also said that religion and beliefs occupy an important place in the daily lives of the people of Senegal. Many denominations of the religion of Islam, the largest faith in the country, are represented. One of my favorite holidays is Eid al-Kabir, or Holiday of the Sacrifice, Ndour said. It honors the willingness of Abraham to sacrifice his son Ishmael as an act of obedience to God's command. Before Abraham could sacrifice his son, however, God provided him with a lamb, which he was supposed to kill in his son's place because of his willingness to sacrifice his own son in the name of God. In commemoration of this intervention, animals are ritually sacrificed. Part of their meat is consumed by the family, while the rest of the meat is distributed to the poor and the needy. Sweets and gifts are given, and extended family members are typically visited and welcomed. We also wear traditional Senegal clothes on this day. Ndour speaks fluent English, which is her third language. She also speaks Wolof, the native language of Senegal. However, all subjects in school are taught in French, so she also considers French as a first language. She learned English as a second language in school. Not only does Ndour speak English, she also writes very well, William Christopher Brown, Midland College English professor and department chair, said. She is friendly and smart. I enjoyed having her in my class. School in the U.S. is very different from school in Senegal, Ndour said. There were no computers in our school in Senegal. We had to memorize everything. All tests were comprehensive. They tested us on everything we had learned. When I moved to New York to finish high school, I actually found it much easier than in Senegal. And Dior explained that the opportunities for females to go to college in Senegal are somewhat limited. I am so thankful for the opportunity to attend Midland College, she said. In addition to being a full-time student, Endure also works approximately 16 hours per week at Chick-fil-A. In her spare time, she enjoys watching movies, especially Bollywood movies, and reading novels in both French and English. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. This article is entitled Report: The Garlic Press Closes, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Garlic Press restaurant on Wadley Avenue is closed, according to a report from the Maybe in Midland Odessa Facebook page. Maybe in Midland Odessa reported the following: Now closed in Midland, the Garlic Press. The post then states, confirmed from several sources that the Garlic Press in Midland has closed its doors after 24 years of serving Midland. There is no information about a closure on the Garlic Press's website, thegarlicpress.net. The Garlic Press is located at 2200 West Wadley Avenue, Suite Number 6. This article is entitled YWLA Student Competes at Scripps National Spelling Bee, by Stuart Doreen. No matter how Shweta Jayakumar places in the Scripps National Spelling Bee, she is going to enjoy the experience. The soon-to-be ninth grader at Young Women's Leadership Academy in Midland is technically a National Spelling Bee returning participant, having competed in 2021. But this is her first time in Washington for the contest. That is because 2021 was a COVID year, and competing in the National Spelling Bee was done virtually, using video conferencing software. For Jayakumar, she never took in Washington, D.C., but competed from her desk at home. So when she says she's ready to meet pronouncer Jacques Bailey, or any of the other judges, or that she's ready to interact with other contestants in person, she means it, because it literally will be a first time for the two-time Reporter-Telegram Region Spelling Bee champion. Now I am here, Jayakumar said. It is cool, even if it is my first and last time. Jayakumar earned her spot in the Scripps National Spelling Bee after bettering friendly rival Shriya Sivakumar of Carver Center in the 36th annual Midland Reporter-Telegram Spelling Bee, sponsored by Diamondback Energy. The win allows her to wear the 204 placard, the number given to Midland champion based on the order where Midland, Texas representative falls in the spelling bee order. The preliminaries begin Tuesday. Jayakumar said she will be part of the third group of spelling bee qualifiers who will take the stage for a potential two-part preliminary round. Spellers on Tuesday will have the opportunity to appear at the microphone twice, first to spell a word and then to define a word to show a speller's command of vocabulary. If the speller doesn't spell the word correctly or misses the definition, he or she is eliminated. If the speller is correct on both fronts, he or she will have an opportunity to spell a second word later in the round. If the speller returns to the microphone and spells that second word correctly, he or she advances to Wednesday's quarterfinals. The 13-year-old said she expects her first turn in front of the microphone on Tuesday will be nerve-wracking. She called her studying for the National Spelling Bee more intense than her preparation for the Regional Bee. My goal is to do well, Jayakumar said. Still, the YWLA student repeated the National Spelling Bee experience isn't entirely about the competition. She wants to have fun and soak in the opportunity to be among the regional champions from across the country. The Bee provides things to do during Bee Week, ranging from STEM and Lego Club experiences to painting and word challenges. Jayakumar said she is looking forward to National Mall Experience on Friday, along with a College Board presentation, where she will learn about the SAT test and changes coming in the future. Scripps also holds a banquet for spellers at the end of the week. At the end, after all the spelling and the competition, I won't see them as competition, Jayakumar said. This is about connecting with people who are like-minded. Midland Reporter Telegram Regional Spelling Bee Champions since 1993. 1993, Jeremy Gengler, Goddard. 94, Tarfia Fazula, Trinity. 95, Vinesh Patel, Abel. 96, Vinesh Patel, Abel. 97, Katie Noah, Goddard. 98, Katie Noah, Goddard. 99, Stacy Moore, Alamo. 2000, Michael Moore, Crockett. 2001, Chirag Alur, Abel. 2002, Michael Moore, Alamo. 2003, Nicholas Van Noyen, Jones. 2004, Jamie Lane, San Jacinto. 2005, Taylor Young, Alamo. 2006, Danielle Rubio, Bonham. 2007, Callie Jones, Abel. 2008, Samuel Dowden, M-A-C-H-E. 2009, Samuel Dowden, M-A-C-H-E. 2010, Jace Brandle, Scarborough. 2011, Thomas Rubio, Alamo. 2012, Thomas Rubio, Alamo. 2013, Gabby Rubio, Alamo. 2014, Gabby Rubio, Alamo. 2015, Anna Ngo, Carver. 2016, Shrikar Shamarthy, Faskin. 2017, Shrikar Shamarthy, Abel. 2018, Shrikar Shamarthy, Abel. 2019, Amulya Ganta, Abel. 2020, Sanjana Vladapatala, Young Women's Leadership Academy. 2021, Shweta Jayakumar, Young Women's Leadership Academy. 2022, Shriya Sivakumar, Carver. 2023, Shweta Jayakumar, Young Women's Leadership Academy. Winners of multiple Reporter Telegram Regional Spelling Bee Championships: Vinesh Patel, 95 and 96, Katie Noah, 98 and 99, Michael Moore, 2001 and 2003, Samuel Dowden, 2009 and 2010, Thomas Rubio, 2012 and 13, Gabby Rubio, 2014 and 15, Shrikar Shamarthy, 2017 and 19, Shweta Jayakumar, 2021 and 23.